This is George Skivington. You're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 20, series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, Jim Harley and James Eastwood, also known as Snowy. We've won a league game. It was something we didn't think was possible, but we've won a league game. So we will be it was a happy pod with perspective, important perspective. More than 5 minutes now, as you quite rightly made the point at the weekend. Just a little note outside of it, if the sound quality for Snowy is a little bit up and down, it's because he's currently in Majorca doing some interesting. So is it what are we calling it? Winter training.
Yeah, just training. It's nice. It's sunny. It got to 24 degrees the other day.
Global warming's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, rarely high for January.
Yeah. It was 19 in the Highlands of Scotland this weekend. So, you know, and then it caught fire brilliantly. So we will be talking about that. We'll also be talking about the next game Gloucester have got, which is the Prem Cup semi-final against Exeter in just over 2 weeks' time. We were talking about that and whether we should go full bore and just basically try and win the bloody thing. Our thoughts on the Six Nations. And also there's the rumours today of who the next two final destinations will be for the European Cups. So 2025, should I say, and 2026. But we will start with the weekend and Sunday's pretty convincing win over Sale Sharks at King's Home. Something that we, as I said, didn't think we would say. I'll start with you, Snow, because as I say, you watched it via some sort of feed.
Fully legitimate.
But fully legitimate as well, for once. And
no, it wasn't fully legitimate. I'm in Spain.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was fully legitimate. Just kind of get your initial thoughts overall. Your positives, your negatives, the perspective, I think, is the key bit, really.
Yeah, I think momentum was quite key because Sale really should have gone immediately a try up. It was a great tackle from Forley, but it was one of those that if you flip it around the other way, it was then no excuse not to finish it.
Yeah, it was a poor finish by us. That was a forwards finish, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then, of course, we had the sort of interception and a great score from Forley himself the other end. And suddenly then, you know, there's a couple of fine moments when things could have started to look quite ugly and we're up. And even though Sale scored and levelled it out, it felt like we had the momentum in that first half and we were moving the ball around quite nicely. And I thought the try that Atkinson scored, that he was heavily involved in, and nice little inside ball from Santi, and the speed at 9 to get the ball out from that breakdown, we haven't seen that at Gloucester for a couple of years. It's usually in that position, we slow everything down, everyone gets reset, we go and we try and score again. But we actually, for once, scored off a retreating defensive line that hasn't shored itself up again, and which is sort of the nature of the game, really. You're trying to create those opportunities. That was really positive. First half, going in at half time, we're like, we're all over them. Things did settle down in the second half. And I don't want to be too negative about that because it does tend to happen when you've got quite a comfortable lead. But maybe it would have been nice to go for the juggernaut a bit more. And there, it did feel like there was a chance, even, 10 minutes from the end, it did feel like there's a way Sale could get back into it. But you mentioned at the start, we take every game on this pod within the context of many other games before and after it. And we have to say that, people have complained about Gloucester's injuries early in the year. And we had a few at one point, but I certainly wouldn't say our squad was completely decimated by injuries. Even at that point, it was more that we just lost a couple in key positions. But this Sale side are absolutely decimated by injuries.
Three more from Sunday, I should say, as well, including a really bad one, I think, for Dupree.
I said for the game, I was confident we were going to win this one. This was the one we were going to win. Because we had a bit of momentum coming off the back of the European wins. Sale absolutely decimated by injuries. And we did win it. I mean, do you want me to go into sort of how our fortunes could potentially change? Because I was reading the very interesting Telegraph. Was it Telegraph or Times?
Was it the article about Skiff's coaching style?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a Telegraph article.
Really quite an eye-opening interview that basically we had decided as a group of coaches that we weren't going to commit to collisions in the early part of the season as a way to manage injuries which had impacted us in previous years, which is just absolutely insane.
I mean, it makes sense if you're talking about training. If you're talking about like in training stuff, so, you know, contact in training, I can kind of understand it. But the way that he was describing it, it was an in-game strategy, which is mental.
It makes sense as well. When you look back, it's like we're not getting over the gain line in collisions. It's like, that was deliberate. And it took 6 months to realize that that's something that probably ain't working.
I think it just takes a very brave coach to make the decision to be soft as a professional rugby team. I'm not convinced that that's in any way, shape or form a good idea. It's happened before in training though, hasn't it, where you kind of limit your contact work, especially, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe on the back of a heavy weekend, and then you do a bit on the Thursday and then you kind of soft again Friday, ready for the Saturday. But certainly in early season as well, players' bodies need to be readied for, you know, the attritional aspect of what is a massive collision fest of a rugby match.
It's a classic thing that I think is a slight on the game at the minute, which is a lot of coaches are coaching by numbers. And if the data says we're going in a bit too hard and the impact per collision is 2.87, whereas Leicester are at the top of the league and theirs is only 2.45, then we need to go a bit softer into collisions. It's like, just step back a bit. And actually, we've got to win collisions because that's quite key to winning rugby games. So maybe the number isn't that important.
That's something they look at with kicking.
Yeah. But maybe it is a... And the trouble is South Africa was successful off the back of basically a AI-driven coaching model, right? So maybe a lot of people are looking at that and saying we can do it.
Yeah, but they've got a team of South Africans.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so, when you're built like a brick shithouse, it doesn't really make too much a difference if you're running in at, you know, X certain speeds or another speed, because you're built like a brick shithouse.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, can Skivington learn and turn it around? I think it would be remiss to say that he can't. The question is whether that rate of learning and adaptation is acceptable in the Premiership when you're two thirds of the season through and you've won one game in 10. But is it a turning point? Look, we need to give it another 5 or 6 games before we can say, amazing, he's managed to turn it around, because he's got to win the next 9 games straight to have a 50% win ratio for that period of games, at least, anyway. Which, I mean, we're talking about American football, and the Seahawks coach who was there when he won the Super Bowl got sacked this season, and they had a winning season. They won more games than they lost. And then that's not considered good enough. So it's a bit about what are our standards. Like it feels like we're setting our standards quite low.
Well, that's been my argument, really, around the issue with Skivington, is that I haven't got a problem. Look, I'll come on to Jim and we'll talk about the game and a few specifics around the game and performances in a minute. But my issue has never really been a personal one with Skivington. I feel that we've had, we're coming up to now 4 years as he's been head coach. I don't feel there's been any progression. And what we tend to get is a lot of excuses and reasons why this isn't working, or we've tried this and it hasn't worked. Well, fair enough. And if you turn it around now and we get to a position in, because to be fair, it doesn't look like he's going anywhere. But if we turn around and next season, we are top of the league, and he's learned from all of this, and it was just a long game and all the rest of it. Fair. I'm not too big to suggest say look, got it wrong. What a great idea to keep him, but personally, I just don't see it. I don't see.
Yeah, it could. If it happens, I will apologize and say we got it wrong on this pod for a long period of time. Absolutely, but absolutely. It's a huge gamble when none of. I mean, we don't know exactly what's going on behind closed doors, but I think the results are the most telling thing. Yeah. And there isn't any evidence to suggest that it's all going to change. No. So, you know, I think we're at a point, as you say, it's not going to change this season. So let's play out the season. Let's see if we can take some momentum through to the start of next season. I think if we win half our games between now and the end of the season, that's not good enough.
No, and this is it. Yeah, sorry. I should go back to my point, and you're right to bring that up again. The mediocrity that we're accepting as a club and as a fan base by saying, you know, yeah, if he wins all of the rest of the games of the season, what, six games left? So we're on a losing season. That's number one. We're on a losing season. We're not going to be in the top four. Even if we win our next six games, that's a bit of a stretch to even get in the top eight because you're reliant on other teams dropping points. You know, we're not in control of that destiny. I suppose, and this is probably the one thing he has got, is he could say by the end of the season, he could point to a trophy, potentially, albeit it's a Premiership Cup, but it's a trophy. It's one more than Bath have won since 20, whenever it was. And, you know, potentially a good run in Europe. You never know, there's a decent chance. We've got a good enough squad to go pretty far in Europe. Now, personally, I think the league is always and should be the most important, particularly when you're in the junior competitions. If we can get some success in those other competitions, you could turn around and go, actually, you know what, there is some progression. We can go into next season with some positivity. But if we lose against Exeter and then get knocked out against Castra, there isn't a lot of positivity left. But anyway, yeah.
I went off on a big tangent away from the details of the game.
No, it's fine. I'll come back to Jim because Jim was there as well. He was actually at the game with me on Sunday, I should say. So, Jim, performance-wise, like you're, I mean, obviously, George McGuigan got player of the match as of TNT. I thought fair enough, but I thought there were other candidates we probably could suggest.
I'd have gone for the guy sat next to him. Yeah, the guy sat next to him on the bench as he was getting that award, Caelan Engerfield, for me, as sort of was mentioned before, his service, and I've noted it the last couple of games as well.
Yeah.
He's very, very quick to get to the ruck. But even more importantly, when he's got to the ruck, he already knows where the 10 is or whoever he's passing to. And he's passed the ball. Like, it's all in one motion. He arrives, the ball's up, and the ball's gone. And the ball's gone very... It's definitely something that has given us that little bit extra.
Yeah, Engerfield, I think, has been a real plus since he's come back from injury. I do wonder as well, actually, how much of an impact he might have had at the beginning of the season. We talk about players, key injuries to players, and you think about at the beginning of the season, we had Varney was obviously away at Italy. We have to give him a bit of a rest period. I think Charlie Chapman has definitely fallen out of favour from the coaching point of view. And then we brought in Mickey Young, who, you know, there's a reason why he was unattached as a player. So we've got him on a short-term contract. He's done a job. But I think Caelan Engerfield has definitely cemented himself as the number one nine at the moment. Another player that I think deserves a lot of praise and I thought was excellent on Sunday was Ruan Ackerman. He definitely, again, it's one of those performances that you think, I really hope he's not going to South Africa, but you can kind of see that if that's the sort of thought process he's got of trying to get into the South African side, so very competitive positions, obviously, but I thought he was excellent on Sunday. Lots of game line collisions, as you said, was important, Snow, and made yardage in a good try as well.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if he's benefiting then from that change of game plan in recent weeks, because he had been off the boil this season. He was like our number one ball carrier over the gain line and hadn't really done it much this season at all to this point. And then he was back to his old self.
Mm.
So yeah, that was really good. I do think he'll be gone.
Yeah, the rumours are that he's off the Lions, isn't it, I think.
But I just think the way he kind of worked with Mercer for his try was superb, and those sorts of understandings. I mean, I tried to watch the game again when I got in Sunday night, and that particular try, the camera crew seemed to have been to see the pass from Zach to Ruin, and they didn't seem to have that angle. But he's clearly, you know, it was a bit like when we had Carlos Spencer and Simpson Daniel and things like that. You know, when you've got these real superstars and they suddenly click and they're on the same page, it makes such a difference, and you can run these fantastic lines with real aggression because you're confident that the guy there will at least think about giving you the ball.
Yeah, agreed. And I think the line is a really important one to reference about the fact that it came from a long way on a really hard line as well. So, you know, even if he got smashed, he would have been hell of a tackle.
Well, if he'd have been smashed by like a guard or a bodyguard at the ruck, then he would have been 2 meters past that tackle,
yeah,
and the ball would have been in Mercer's hands, and Mercer would have carried on the run, probably under the posts. So, it's that kind of thing, I think, that we've potentially been missing from our forward pack. We've had a few jackals, but we haven't had, you know, that kind of dynamism of hard running.
Yeah,
when you have Fawley running wild and then you've got Mercer working with Ackerman in the back rows, our squad is so good. It's definitely
it's frustrating as hell
squad on paper. We've said it numerous times, yeah, but I think it just highlights it, doesn't it? When people have said that, you know, our squad isn't strong enough, that's bullshit.
I think there's probably key areas where we've had a weakness. I think fullback, when Santi's not playing, I think that's still a weakness. And I think 10 has been an issue. I think actually coming on to Charlie Atkinson, nothing flashy, but I thought controlled it pretty well. I mean, one thing to bear in mind, actually, just going back to your point about the game on Sunday and the performances between the two halves and stuff, really important to note that first 25 minutes, even though we were in the lead and it felt, We didn't have a lot of ball in hand. We were kicking a lot. I don't necessarily actually have a problem with when we were kicking, because we were actually a lot of the time in our own 22, and I'm not expecting us to run it from there. But I thought Atkinson did well. There's a couple of bombs he put up, clearly a tactic they've been working on against a Sale back three that aren't necessarily that good under the high ball. Took his try really well. Yeah, I thought the other thing as well, actually, I didn't necessarily think of when I thought of Charlie Atkinson was the physicality. I thought he made some decent tackles and put himself about. Useful, we've got him in now with Hastings probably out for, again, most of the rest of the next period. I would have thought, it sounds like he's done his knee again, which is a shame.
We should also give a little ode to Sale's defensive clearance strategy. From a simple kick to touch, yes, to having a player yellow card in conceding a penalty on your own boat.
Yeah, that was pretty spectacular. Yeah.
Probably one of the worst I've ever seen. He wasn't even under pressure.
You know, no, he wasn't. And what was great as well was the fact that there was a genuine thought, like, this could be a penalty try. It wasn't. And it was clear, it was quite rightly wasn't a penalty try. But you had to actually ask the question, this could be a penalty try.
Without us being involved in it, basically.
Yeah, I thought Santi was unlucky with his try disallowed for the, what was it? It was because they both put their hands on the ball at the same time, didn't they? So it meant that it's given to the defending team, which I thought was a bit harsh. But yeah, that's the law. But one final thing, actually, on the game, really to touch on, which was the continued dominance of Gloucester scrum. Suddenly, from nowhere, against Edinburgh, against Castor, and against Sale, I mean, it was laughable again at times. I mean, there's the iconic shot of Kirill given at the beginners, he's just basically just run through their front row. So suddenly it's just, I don't know where that's come from really, because they just haven't done that at any point up until about 3-4 weeks ago.
Yeah, we're looking really good on, you know, on opposition scrum, whereas you know, normally we'd be like, oh my god, you know, who's going to be cutting a good line, who's going to be carving us apart, and now we're like, oh, we've knocked on, never mind, we'll have a penalty instead.
Yeah.
it really does seem a bit that way. I think we talked about you know, Jamal's a fantastic scrum manager, and he's playing more and more minutes. He's starting games rather than finishing games, and that seems to be, you know, going really, really well. And obviously Kirill, you know, he's always been an incredibly strong raw talent, and you know, I did say that, you know, once he has a couple of years of top quality scrum coaching and playing under his belt, and here he is, he's absolutely just a powerhouse, doing fantastic work. So yeah, you would think a lot of opposition teams are going to be looking at our scrum and being a little bit nervous at the moment.
Yeah, the other bit as well is, I mean, and the depth as well. I mean, again, there's been a continuous thing about wanting to have a tight head sign, and you know, I'm wondering whether with the depth we've got at the moment, do we need a tight head? I suppose the only issue is that Kirill is 37, and if we're going to sign him again, it's 1 year deal. 2 years is probably asking a lot for someone who's been pretty. Pretty good in terms of the fitness stakes. I just wonder, at some point the body just goes, "Nah, this is stupid." I mean, he is Russian, so therefore probably built slightly differently. But I suppose the other issue as well is, from Kirill's point of view, is if there's an opportunity to stay, I probably would be looking to take it. I don't think Russia is necessarily where you'd, and I mean, I know family and all the rest of it, but you probably want to try, if you can, to stick around here for the foreseeable. I think it's probably a safer place to be, but you know, we'll see. Any other names, Snow, you want to kind of pick out? I mean, I think there's a few others you probably felt. Freddie Clark had another good game. Again, he seems to be returning to form.
Yeah, I briefly mentioned Forley, but you know, when he's actually, he's really good in defence as well, and very physical. And when he's got the ball, he is one of those players still that you sort of go, something could happen here, because he can accelerate extremely quickly. He's got a step. Sometimes I think he takes contact a bit too much.
Yeah.
He should use his step a bit more. The only reason he hasn't looked so good this season is because he's a winger, and wingers are dependent. Wingers look good in good teams. That's just always the case.
Yeah.
But he's top class. Santi, again, you know, consistently good. He's got that bit of magic where he can, you know, little no look pass or can sort of float through space as well, which he brings a lot of balance to the game. So yeah, I think Well, as I say, that it was a strong starting lineup, and we have a very strong team. So when they do start to click, it just shows what we're capable of. And I'd say we only show 70% of what that squad's capable of in that game. Because we switched off a bit second half, and there's still a few things where it's like you're not quite connecting properly. But yeah, the team's got so much potential, we've just got to get out.
Yeah. The one thing I would say as well, and this is the caveat, that was a weakened Sale side, and it was a really poor performance by Sale. Their kicking in particular was pretty awful. I mean, they were kicking far too deep, giving, as we said, you're giving people like Santi, Thorley, Seb Atkinson, you're giving them time and space like they did. They're going to cause you problems, and then you've got them with confidence and running at depth and pace. You know,
they handed us two tries and completely blew an absolute sitter.
Yeah, so
it's very easy for the scoreline to look quite different.
Yeah, we're going to pause. We're going to talk about the next stage of Gloucester season, which is a Premiership Cup semi-final in a couple of weeks' time against Exeter, and whether we should go full.
Hi, I'm Lewis Ludlow, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Right. On the 17th of Feb, we've got our next game, which is against Exeter at home in the Premiership Cup semi-final. If we were to win and Leicester were to beat Ealing, Gloucester would be at home in the final. If Ealing was to win and Gloucester to win, we would have to go down to Ealing, which would be 12 people from Ealing and 2,500 people from Gloucester, clearly. But anyway...
And we'd struggle to fit in, wouldn't we?
I think we would very much struggle to fit in. It's a dump, as we've mentioned before on several occasions. I suppose the first question then, Jim, look, it's the semi-final of a competition. A couple of years ago, when we played Worcester, we treated it in the sort of spirit of the competition. Worcester didn't and hammered us. Are we going, sod it, let's just put our best players out there. They've got a month off. They've got bugger all else to do. Let's take it on and try and win it.
Yes.
Good we clear that one.
I think, you know, we have played the games as they were designed, if you like. We utilised them as our pre-season. We went through a lot of our younger players, our academy, our new signings, all that sort of thing. We rotated lots. We didn't go into contact with any aggression to maintain fitness. But now, as you say, Ed, we haven't got any other games. It's not like we're playing these, and it's a good opportunity for our first 15 to have a rest because they're back to it in 2 weeks' time. You know, there's a big bit of time off for them anyway. And, you know, I'm pretty confident that Leicester are going to put out a side that they are confident will win at Ealing relatively easily. Mm. And I'm pretty confident that Exeter will bring a side to us that they think can beat whoever we decide to play. I mean, I'm not entirely sure what the Exeter injury situation is like and whether they're maybe struggling a bit like Sale are, but, you know, it's a no-brainer. If we win this and Leicester do us a favour, then we've got a home final, and that's a big payday for the club, you know. So, I think that would be great. And as you mentioned earlier, it's silverware. It might not be the best bit of silverware, but it's something that you can promote to your potential sponsors. It's something that your current sponsors will get to enjoy, you know, especially if we have a final at King's Home. That's a nice nice day out for hospitality and all that sort of thing. So there's an awful lot of bonuses to it outside of the actual bit where supporters get to cheer on a cup win.
Mm. Snow, your thoughts? Agree with Jim or slightly different?
Disagree.
Yay, goody.
I don't see what the point is really of potentially risking injury, players not quite being up to it the same level because it's Premiership Cup. I think if we've just decided to massively change direction on our game plan for the season, that we don't lose players to the Six Nations. So this is a great period to get everyone together, working through all of those drills, all of those sets. And there'll be a few of those players, those sort of first team players that you'll want to play because they haven't had as much game time, or you want to see them try a few things in a game and use it for that scenario, but not a what's the best team that I can put out to win this, because it just doesn't really mean anything. Jim's done a good job of selling it, but I couldn't care less if we win the Premiership Cup if it means we get one extra win in the league.
No, I think I totally understand. And let's be fair, I probably wouldn't be as enthusiastic as Jim if there was a genuine chance of, say, finishing top four or getting in, or basically saying, like, we win a couple of more games in the league, we're going to be in Champions Cup.
But our league is absolute toast.
This is my kind of point. Yeah, I think I'm kind of the opinion that we're not gonna get anywhere in the league. We're probably gonna still finish ninth.
Yeah, but I don't think we can afford to play any league game to a lesser level or a higher risk than if there was something to play for.
So the next league game, I think, is Bristol, isn't it? I think. And then, but we've also got the, I think that's on the 20, that I think is the 22nd of March, maybe, I'm not sure. But then we've got the, if we were to win this, we then play a final, I think, at the end of March.
Also, I don't think the Premiership Cup keeps Skivington in the squad. I think in the job. I think how he does in the league and potentially Challenge Cup. I mean, Challenge Cup is the one that I think we should be really targeting because that's both a high standard and we could get something massive out of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, if he wins the Premiership Cup and we finish 10th, what's the second last position at the minute?
Ninth.
We finish ninth. And we don't get to the final of the Challenge Cup, then that's a massive failure of the season. The Premiership Cup doesn't save it.
No. I wouldn't say the Premiership Cup saves it. I suppose from the club's point of view, it must be incredibly tempting to put a little bit of pressure on and say, look, win this and we've got a really good chance of having a final at King's Own. Now, you're obviously not guaranteed to win. I think London Irish had two in a row and they buggered it up twice. But I just think, I don't know, I think if
we in terms of a payday for the crowd or?
Yeah, you get the crowd in. There isn't any, I mean, the thing as well is, if it had been in the middle of a season, like a season where you've got other regular fixtures going on, there probably wouldn't necessarily be the clamour for it. But we've literally got no rugby other than this extra game for like 7-8 weeks or something like that. There's a Bath away friendly. You know, there's not a huge,
which is a weird one.
There's not a huge amount of other things you can do. And I think from the club, it's a great opportunity to sell a few more tickets, get some people in the door, sell some beers, sell some hospitality. And, you know, how great is that? Having on your 100, I take the point, it's not a proper trophy. Don't get me wrong. It's not like winning the cup in 2003 when it was actually a real competition to win. But lifting a trophy in your 150th season.
It's a nice thing.
I agree with you, Snow, that if I was going to choose between the two, if I could say I want to be in a final of one of these competitions, it would be the Challenge Cup every day.
Of course.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
I do know that the Leicester game is on the Sunday, isn't it? So we won't know if we're playing for a home final.
No. But I mean, we kind of do. I mean, if we win, the expectation would be Leicester will put out a side probably good enough to beat Ealing. I mean, I would be surprised if they go really, really weak. And Ealing haven't been too smart in their league. They're top, but I think they're top by default because the other teams keep beating each other.
And it's just worth noting, actually, that's Sunday the 18th. King's Home's open for the day for the Premiership Under 18s. Finals.
So oh, of course it is. Yeah,
there's loads of games on, I believe. I mean, I haven't got a full rundown of what the games are, but I think there's quite a few games. I'm not sure whether it runs from 9:30 in the morning to 6:30 in the evening, like I've got in my calendar. But
there's a double header this weekend as well, isn't there? There's a double header at King's Own this weekend for the kids. I think
they've been really, really. It's really, really hard to get information on some of the academy fixtures, but yeah, 1:30 on Saturday the 3rd, Gloucester under 18s versus Saracens under 18s, so that will be a cracking fixture, I'm sure. It's really nice, actually, that sort of the under 18s and, you know, what was the A League. I used to really like those fixtures because you'd get a lot of those academy lads and you'd get their families making long road trips to support their kids. And it just kind of showed what a wonderful family event and how proud parents can be of their kids that are doing well enough to be in, you know, a Gloucester Academy or a Saracens Academy or what have you. So, anyone that's knocking about, on the weekends to go to King's Own and see those extra ones, the bars should be open and you have yourself a nice time.
Yeah. I think that covers the cup. We want to win, but it's not necessarily the be all and end all. Certainly not for Snow, anyway.
I'm just really grateful that they've gone for a 5:03 kickoff.
Yeah, because that makes huge. Those 5 minutes.
It, It does make a difference because the women's game kicks off at 1.
Oh, right, yeah, for you, yeah.
Same. So,
yeah, you're going to the women's game, aren't you?
It gives me an extra 5 minutes, which I reckon will mean that when I drop my mate Wayne off and then drive up Denmark Road, he will almost certainly arrive before kickoff. If I park on if I can find somewhere on the zigzags outside Denmark Road School to park, I might just about make it for kickoff.
People of Gloucester, if you've got a spare space on your drive, right, Jim needs it, okay? Just anywhere near around the Denmark Road, Kings End Road area.
I can't get away with just driving into the Kings End car park, which I have done on a few occasions, but maybe on a Premiership Cup fixture, the security might not let me in like they have in the past.
Right. We're going to move on finally to a couple of things. First of all, Six Nations. Now, I'm not going to go too much detail because what we'll talk about, the weeks as we go ahead. But I suppose the key stories are, how will France cope without Dupont? How will Wales cope with loads of injuries and no Rhys Sammet? Can Ireland possibly recover from the disappointment from the World Cup? How good are England now? Are we starting to potentially see a revival? I'm not sure. Are Italy as bad as they were in the World Cup? Was that a blip? And can Scotland kind of show some sort of enough form that they might actually win a championship for the first time since 1999, is it? Or 2000? So it's a long time. I suppose we'll start off with France. I talk about how could they cope with Dupont. Someone has just tweeted this, and this is ridiculous. This is the possible team to face Ireland on Friday. 15 Thomas Ramos, 14 Damien Penaud, 13 Gael Ficou, 12 Jonathan Darty, 11 Yoann Mofaina, 10 Mathieu Jalibert, 9 Maxime Lucu, and then in the Cyril Bailly at 1, Moavaca at 2, Antonio at 3, Gabriel Igas, I can't remember how to pronounce his name, at 4, Willemser at 5, Kroos at 6, Olivon at 7, Aldrete at 8. I think that'll be fine. Don't be wrong. Dupont is a big miss, but when you've got that as your bloody first 15, that is, they've got Marchand, Aldegheri, Torfinia, Wocky. Yeah, that's not bad, is it? That's just on the bench. They're on the bench.
I think the French are the strongest side. They're the strongest side in the Six Nations for me, and they may have, they might, like everyone, have a couple of injuries here and there, but I think their strength in depth, they've got incredible quality that aren't even on their bench. So I think you look at England, who have potentially got the biggest pool of players. There's not a huge amount of players that you go, why are they not on that bench? Why are they not starting?
Well, one is plays for Gloucester, but everyone else,
there's the obvious one, obviously.
That's the obvious one. But yeah, no, I take your point. Yeah.
Who's home out of Ireland and France?
So that will be France at home.
Yeah, so France win the Six Nations and Ireland come second.
do you think...
Then Scotland, then England.
Then Scotland, okay.
Yeah, then Wales and Italy.
Well, Scotland had a really good start last year, didn't they?
Mm. Yeah, but then they played some decent teams and lost. So
then it came off the rails. And obviously Wales didn't have a particularly good Six Nations.
No.
Wales are just a shambles of an international setup at the minute.
Well, that's the thing. And I think that you would imagine they'll do worse this time round because they're an even more of a mess than they were. And there's... the players are just they're looking out for number one, really. They because they've got to. You only have to look at the amount of players that are coming out of Wales. Although saying that, Sheed is just signed to go back to Cardiff, hasn't he?
Cardiff, yeah.
A few might be going back.
I mean, the thing is, I'm looking at the fixtures and the way it works around. So it's France, Ireland, Italy, England. So France on a Friday, Italy, England Saturday, Wales, Scotland on Saturday. There's a bit of a thing. There's a bit of a bit of a a story going around about that Italy fancy this, that Italy fancy this as an opportunity to beat England for the first time. I can understand why. If you look at England over the last year, World Cup aside, and let's be honest, for the World Cup, they weren't great. I mean, the South Africa game was an incredible performance. I think Argentina was a good performance. I'm going to revalue my original statement after that game. But the Argentina game was a great performance from the point of view they had a man sent off after like 5 minutes. But outside of that, there wasn't a huge amount of encouragement. But Italy were dreadful. I mean, they were awful at World Cup. I mean, getting nearly 100 points on them by New Zealand just killed it entirely for him. Can we really see Snow? Can we see Italy pulling off an upset this weekend?
No, but I can see why, because they've been targeting England win for a long time because they're the only Six Nations team they haven't beaten.
Yeah.
And it's a new England side because we've had post-World Cup retirees.
Yeah.
So it's a bit unknown. And I can't think of another time we've played Italy away first game. So because it's first game, there's no momentum going into it. Yeah, 100%. This is Italy's best shot for a while. I still don't think they'll do it. I think that the thing about England is that even when we're bad, like we've got this in other sports as well. It's just something about our attitude. So we don't lose to awful teams like Italy. Like we will just get the job done, even if it'll be really bad.
Mm.
It doesn't get to like Wales, France, even Ireland levels of embarrassing. So I mean, we've had some awful sides that have gone to Italy and still got away with a result.
Yeah,
like that era under Martin Johnson. And so yeah, I think we'll get the job done, and I think it will be scrappy. It won't be a good game to watch. No one will come out of it feeling positive about future England, but we'll still get the win.
So there is obviously some news from the England camp that Marcus Smith is out. He's got an injury in training. So
is that confirmed? Because I saw that as rumored earlier.
No, he's out. He's out for the game. Again, obviously being in Spain, you probably wouldn't have picked up. But he's out of the first weekend, potentially more than the first weekend. It's also noted. Should be noted. That does give an opportunity to obviously George Ford. You expect to be the starting 10. That seems to be the expectation. But there's, again, equally been some play out there saying about Finn Smith, you know, this, why not? This is an opportunity. If you're going to give if one of the big criticisms of England in the past has been we don't give the opportunities to these players who are playing really well in the league. Finn Smith seems to have all the attributes you'd expect in an international fly half. It's against Italy. They're probably not going to test him in the same way that a Scotland or an Ireland would do from a baptism of fire. Why not give him a go?
Because George Ford hasn't retired from international rugby yet. Everything you said is right, yeah. But that ain't going to make a difference.
But it's England Rugby Union, so we don't think of anything outside the box.
I think Finn Smith and Marcus Smith, obviously, you know, different players, and they have different, different USPs. But actually, compared to George Ford, they're far more similar a game plan that you can base around those two than you can around George Ford. So, if we're going into a tournament and the plan 2 weeks ago was that Marcus was going to be starting 10. I would suggest you maintain that with Finn Smith at starting 10 with a few tweaks to what you're trying to do. And then you have George Ford as your fantastic kicking kind of putting the ball into the corners and your spiral bombs and all that sort of thing. As and when you need, you know, the game plan decides you need to, whether it's to hold out in the final 20 or whether it's to sort of change it a little because it's not working. But you're absolutely right, Ed. We bang our heads against walls far too often when coaches go, oh yeah, well I couldn't pick him because he didn't have any experience.
Yeah, I mean,
when it comes to World Cups and things like that. So yeah, this is the perfect opportunity to give a player that has a realistic expectation to be in and around the England squad for the next 5 to 10 years.
Hmm.
Let's get him going now. Why wait?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say in George Ford's defence, you know, he's 30, so it's not as if he's over the hill. You'd expect him, if he stays fit, that another World Cup is in him.
And he's quite good.
And he is very good. You know, he fundamentally, he's a very good 10. And I think I would expect England's pack to be dominant. That would obviously help George Ford. It's just, I think, yeah, I don't know. My gut feeling would be, let's be fair, it's going to probably be George Ford at 10. I would have just liked to see Finn Smith start.
It's a lot easier to start Finn Smith in this game, as you alluded to, Ed.
Yeah,
rather than start him against France or something like that.
Yeah, France, Ireland, or Scotland, where you're going to get some angry people running at you because they hate English. I think the Italians are at best indifferent. you know, they've got bigger fishes to fry. So that's that. And then the other games this weekend, as I say, we got France, Ireland. Snowy's already touched on it. He thinks France will win. I do agree. I think it'll be a good game. I mean, I'm expecting that one to be a bit of a belter. And then Wales, Scotland, you would expect Scotland to probably nick that because they've got probably better players in key positions. But Scotland are as flaky as anything in Cardiff. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting one. Overall, then, we'll do a prediction for that. We'll do a prediction for who we think is going to be the winner and who we think is going to be the wooden spoon. So, Snowy, you've already said France for the winner.
Yeah, I already said France and Italy.
Yeah, France and Italy.
Let's do the full order.
Go on then, let's go for the full order. So France,
Ireland, Scotland, yeah. England, yeah. Wales, Italy.
Okay, Jim?
Italy and Wales could be the other way around, but I'm going to go that way.
You're going to go that way, okay. Jim?
I'm going to go with my heart rather than my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go France.
Yeah.
Narrowly over England.
Yeah.
Your heart is for France to narrowly beat England.
Yeah. Well, I've got to have a little bit of head in there. I was thinking I could. No, it's going to be France, England, Scotland, Ireland. Mm-hmm. Italy, Wales.
Okay.
I'm noting this down because I'm going to see
how far away. I'm going to say France, but not a Grand Slam. I'm going to say England second. I agree. I'm going to say Ireland third, Scotland, and I'm going to say Wales and Italy. And the only reason why Wales will be ahead of Italy is Wales are playing in Cardiff. I know Italy last won in Cardiff, but I just think they tend to, if they're going to, where you expect if Italy to win, they're going to win at home. And I just can't see it. The interesting one actually though is for Italy, I think they've got two home games this year? And their two home games are England and Scotland. And they're both sellouts, or very close to being sellouts, which hasn't really happened before. So, and that's the one, that Italy-Scotland game is going to be the interesting one, I think, for Italy. If they can rattle Scotland and get underneath the skin, I could see them winning that. But if they don't win that game, I think it's wooden spoon time. That's good. I like that.
It's tough, isn't it? I think it's tough being Italy at the moment in world rugby, isn't it? So that's why I'd really like to see them pick up not just one, but maybe two wins.
Two wins would be a bit massive. And again, I think probably Scotland at home, Wales away would be the one they probably would. Obviously, they're trying to target England, but I agree. I'm going to hopefully not eat our words here, but I can't really see them beating England. I don't think they've got quite enough there. In a few years' time, with their youth set up and they're really encouraging results and performances at youth level, we might start to see them pushing the likes of England and France and Ireland a bit harder. Final thing for this week, though. Thank you very much, guys, again. It's come out today, so that there is a bit of speculation on where the next Champions Cup, Challenge Cup finals are going to be. A few weeks ago, the suggestion was it was going to be Lisbon in 2025 and Amsterdam in 2026. But it's come out, there's been a bit of reporting today suggesting that 2025 will be Cardiff and 2026 will be Bilbao again.
The first two would have been great.
Well, this is so that my question would be, out of those four, and I mean it's a pretty obvious answer, I think, but of those four, where would you want them to go?
Those first two.
I mean, Amsterdam's a drive away.
Yeah,
whereas
and Lisbon's
Bilbao and Lisbon are not.
No, but Lisbon at least is that, you know, you can fly into an airport which can cope with it.
Yeah.
And cheap.
And cheaply. Or if you don't fly into Lisbon, you can fly into other places and then go to Lisbon if you need to. The problem I think we've got with Amsterdam is, I suppose Amsterdam's Ajax, out of the Ajax Arena. Lisbon, you've got selection of stadia you could choose from. Again, they'll be both football, obviously clearly football ground. I can understand the rationale behind Cardiff, though. Fundamentally, it is a great place for a rugby game.
I'm sure Cardiff will host it fantastically well. I mean, there won't be any Welsh teams in either of the finals, of course. But the thing is,
those other two places will host it really well as well. You saw how mad Portugal went for the Rugby World Cup when they got their win.
It seems a no-brainer, they deserve it based on that alone. Yeah.
And it's easy enough to travel to that you can guarantee a stadium there is going to sell out for the final.
Yeah.
And you'll pack it. So it's like the best of both worlds. You're not sort of risking attendance and capacity and money, but you're still doing something great for the local area. Amsterdam the same. Like the Amsterdam Arena holds like 55,000, I think.
Which is it's about what they look for these.
Yeah, which is about right. They'll go nuts for it just because they're quite conscious of rugby in the Netherlands, and there's quite a few clubs around, but even though it's not that big a sport there. And again, it's so easy to travel to from the rest of Europe.
Belgium,
you're gonna pack it
German,
out.
French, Netherlands,
yeah,
Luxembourg.
If you want to grow the game, you've got to play it somewhere
else. Two perfect places. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about Amsterdam, there's another bit of stat coming out about the viewership of the World Cup. And Germany was up massive, huge increase. I think it was a huge increase from, I think it was something like they were saying that 4 years ago it was about 10 million, give or take. And then in total, I think they were up to 17 million now viewers of the World Cup, which is huge for a country that isn't known for, that's across the whole World Cup, I should say, not just like in one go. But, you know, it's a massive audience for it. And then you add in the likes of the Netherlands. And we saw loads of, when we were out there, we saw loads of Dutch, German, Czech, particularly for the Romania game. You know, I think a lot of Central European and European countries kind of bolted onto Romania as their representative as such. And that was really good to see. The only problem with Bilbao, it's an incredible place. It's in the heart. It's like in a heartland of rugby in terms of the Basque area. It's just an absolute pig to get to. As people who went to watch from Gloucester a couple of years ago, it doesn't have an airport that's big enough. You've got to fly to somewhere else and then drive.
And as you say, it's already a rugby area, really. You've just crossed the border into Spain. It's not like you're taking it to a new market.
Like, you'd almost think the other option, and it's too big, but the other option would be somewhere like Barcelona, which they can't do because the Nou Camp's not rebuilt yet, and it's too big as a ground. You're not going to sell 105,000 seats for a Champions Cup final unless you're pricing them at like a tenner.
I don't think there's another stadium.
So you've got the stadium that they're currently playing in, which is the old Olympic Stadium. Espanyol Stadium, I think, is about 30,000, 35,000. So it's probably not big enough. Outside of that, the only other thing, it does rear its head every time. It is remarkable that Italy hasn't had a Champions Cup final. I mean, it's almost becoming laughable now.
Yeah, because well, they've got,
because they host both.
Mm.
You don't have two different cities, do you, for the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup? So it's
just, I mean, it doesn't even have to be Rome. I mean, you know, you've got, you think about the stadia in Italy. You've got, I mean, you could have Turin, you could have Milan. You know, they're big stadiums that look
at. I think if you put it in Italy, you put it in Rome just because you've already got the international support that used to go in there.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I would say that rugby is a northern sport in Italy. So places like Milan, you know, the Veneto, so around Venice and then Parma, Bologna. There's it is a rugby heartland of Italy, that part of Italy. So it kind of makes sense to put it up there. But yeah, I agree with you. You know, probably if you're going to give it to them, you're going to give it to them in Rome, and it will be the Stadio Olimpico, which again. Who doesn't want to spend a weekend in Rome?
I think it's more likely to end up in Johannesburg than it is in Italy. That's the bloody problem, isn't it?
Yeah, which is just stupid, as fundamentally, but that's rugby union.
Abu Dhabi.
We joke, but that seems to be the next. There's been talk, let's be fair, there has been talk of Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi. I think there's been talk about America. Possibly.
I don't think that was a talk. It was just an envelope.
Mightily stuffed with notes, yeah.
Signed in blood.
Yeah, that does worry me. That does concern me, is that I really hope we don't go down that route. I mean, you see what happened recently, actually, just a little aside around football. So they had the Spanish Super Cup semi-final, I think it was, between Real Madrid and Barcelona. I think that's right. I might have got, if I've got the wrong teams, but apologies. But it was, they had a minute's silence for Franz Beckenbauer. And this is in Saudi. And what they forgot to sort of reference is the fact that in Saudi Arabia and in many Muslim countries, minute silences don't exist. It's not something they do. So what they did was boo. Because you don't have a minute silence for anybody in Muslim countries. So that went well. So basically, it's just not going to work, is it? I mean, I suppose if whoever pays the piper and all the rest of it. Anyway, thank you very much.
Before we disappear, guys, I know there's lots of rumours about players incoming and stuff, and I do believe there was some chatter about Skivington disappearing after the fans forum to get to the airport.
This mysterious player that's going to come over and sign for us. Yeah.
So Gareth Anscombe's been spotted at Kingsholm, by all accounts, in some chauffeur-driven car. But I was just wondering if anyone had heard anything else regarding comings and goings.
So the only rumours... So funny enough, I think I summarised it the other day on Shedweb. The rumours that were floating around was Will Stewart, and he's re-signed for Bath. There was a rumour about Callum Sheedy, and he's gone to Cardiff. There was a rumour of Thomas Williams, which he has signed. There was a rumour... Gareth Anscombe was the other rumour, because we had that weird thing that Gloss Fly on Twitter put around a bridge and somebody running over it.
9 and 10 coming over a bridge.
Yeah. Or 10 and 15 coming over the bridge. That was it. Something like that. There's also a rumour around a prop potentially from France. And what was the other one I saw? I think there was a rumour around... Oh, and the continuous rumour around Radwan on the basis that he's a winger. And he's good.
Yeah, I was speaking to a chap last night who I was standing near in the shed, and he was saying that, you know, it's, what was the comment? Yes, I'm having talks with someone, and if I get him, you'll all be happy because you like him, or something, you know, words to that effect. And Radwan kind of, to me, was fitting into that. You know, he's a player that's bloody good, always been a threat whenever he's played against us, and obviously we're in that kind of looking to fill a gap, aren't we, with a bit of a star on the wing. So not that we potentially need to in the short term. Certainly for next season, we probably want to. But it's just interesting. We've got a few different names being thrown around, as is always the way.
Yeah, you see, the one thing I would say about Radwan, and I'll just finish with Snow here, is that we've lost in Rhys Summitt a world-class player. And there was talk on Facebook particularly. I was like, you know, who would you want to replace him? And there was a few people saying a local lad. Well, and I think didn't you say something? I'd rather have somebody good, which I thought was quite a nice response. Radwan would be I think not quite like for like. He's not the same. I don't think he's quite as good as Rhys Summitt, but Radwan would be a very good replacement signing for Rhys Summitt.
I don't think we should be buying top-notch wingers.
That's the other point.
The commander salary, which Radwan definitely would.
Mm-hmm. I spend the money elsewhere.
Yeah, that would be poor use of
funds. Cap. Especially we seem to be quite good at developing wingers. And generally it's a place that's easier to backfill when you're short as well. So,
yeah, because you've got utility ability, you know, players can play.
So definitely not where I'd be spending my money.
Yeah, it would be nice if we had a local lad coming through. And to be fair, the lad that was playing on the wing on Sunday seemed to do, a pretty good job.
Alex Hurl. Alex Hurl did a good game. Josh Hathaway's come through and played a few games as well. Yeah. He seems decent, yeah.
We've got some, you know, pretty handy academy lads, and even sort of, you know, and our Gloucester under 18 lads as well. So, yeah, we have traditionally had quite a good breeding ground for good wingers. So I agree with Snowy there. It probably makes sense to spend the money elsewhere.
I think second row for me. If I was going to pick a position, we need something a little bit more. We are stretching it.
Physical
second row. Alamano's done a lot. I mean, he plays pretty much every week if he can play. And we don't really have anyone in of his ilk. And I think that'll be the air.
Pardon? Fly half as well, because I'm almost certain Hastings has got. Skivington basically said Hastings is going.
Yeah, we're not going to. I don't think we're going to take that option. You can't with the injury. You know, he's a nice guy, and I think when he plays and he plays well, he's very, very good. But he's just always injured, and you can't. Yeah. You just can't justify that.
And top class fly arse don't come cheap, so no. That's where I'd be spending the money.
Yeah. So we probably won't. Yeah. Right. Thank you very much. Really appreciate that. Thank you very much, Jim, for that added little thing at the end. I really appreciate that. We will be back next week, hopefully with a few more lads on board. I think Russ and Loz possibly maybe to join us next Sunday. But in the meantime, have a nice rest of the time over in Majorca. And don't fall off a mountain or anything stupid like that. Jim, I will be in touch, and we'll have a good rest of the week.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.